Inside Biz.
On the street.
On the air.
Inside Your Business on Kaya Biz is powered by Capitec Business Banking. Bank on better with Capitec, the business bank for everyone.
It's 13 minutes to 7 o'clock. You're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959. But let me tell you what is coming up before we get inside your business.
Inside Your Business on Kaya Biz.
For so many of us, when we take a look at the latest data that's typically released by Stats SA and the CIPC, we're well aware that South African businesses do find themselves under immense financial pressure. So much so that we hear of businesses essentially needing to be resuscitated, going into business rescue processes, and in the worst case scenario, facing liquidation. But this is a journey. It doesn't just happen overnight that a business essentially runs out of funds, can't continue operating successfully, and as a result has to let go of contracts, staff, and operations. So what happens? Do South African businesses typically wait too late until they actually initiate business rescue processes? One man who's a great friend of Kaya Biz and has often taught me a thing and three about business is Gareth Creeman, partner in the Business Restructuring, Rescue and Insolvency team at Cox Yates. Gareth, such a pleasure to have you on the show again, sir. Welcome back.
Hi, Gugu. Thank you. And thank you for the kind words and good evening to your listeners.
Indeed, we're all about to learn a thing or two from yourself tonight here, Gareth, because so often we see these data, the stats and the numbers being shared regarding business liquidations in South Africa. And we typically, you know, raise frustrations and concern that there just isn't enough support for businesses. But maybe let's just start there. Before a business goes into business rescue or even facing liquidation, I'm assuming there must be a number of red flags that typically pop up regarding its sustainability and survival.
There's numerous red flags that hit companies, and the signs are typically there. And more often than not, you find the directors are generally in a state of denial. And they always hope and sit upon a hope and a prayer saying, we're going to land this big contract. There's a lot of work coming in. There's pipeline work coming in. And sometimes it never materializes quick enough. But the red flags is diminishing and weakening of cash flow. You know, debt is receding in terms of the business. There's numerous red flags that are applicable to companies. You know, leading up to the financial distress, key employees leaving the organization, you know, shrinkage in terms of work, market sector growth is not there anymore. So there's numerous factors which parties need to take into account.
And I'm assuming, you know, there are different metrics that one also needs to take a look at. And typically this is information that would sit with the director of the business. Do external stakeholders even have a say to actually comment on these red flags to maybe sway and influence the strategic outcomes of the operations?
Look, before a business rescue stake, and that shareholders certainly do have a say, depending upon what's contained in the memorandum of incorporation, in terms of the appointment of directors to the company, and they would be able to raise certain issues, obviously at shareholder level, at shareholder meetings and so forth, but they've got somewhat limited powers in many aspects. But when companies do find themselves in a downward trajectory, remember, any party can place a company into business rescue, be it a shareholder, an employee, a trade union, a director, a creditor. You know, multiple parties can bring applications and put a company into business rescue if they believe that the company is heading into financial distress. And by financial distress, it's reasonably likely that the company will become insolvent in the 6 month window, 6 months into the future, or it will become insolvent in the next 6 months. So any party can do that. And what we do find in the market is that a lot of companies do not apply the 6 month forward looking exercise. And it's a continuous exercise that boards of directors need to look at, is to say, in the next 6 months, will I still be trading as a going concern? And you know, we've often raised this question in the market to many companies. And as companies are standing now in September, everyone's looking forward and saying, well, we've got 3.5 months of this year left until we go on holiday in December. In most industries, they do a shutdown. But how many companies have applied solvency and liquidity, done a forward 6 month exercise and said, do I have money for bonuses, for employee salaries come December? And when I restart up operations in January, do I have sufficient liquidity and cash flow in order to pay for the January pay run for salaries and potentially February? And what happens if my customers don't pay me over that period? Where does it leave me? Are my pockets deep enough? And companies have got to start doing a forward-looking exercise. Now, pre-COVID, and probably 2015, 2016, 2017, a lot of companies were criticized for having lazy balance sheets and not spending money. And when COVID came along, a lot of companies started spending money and depleting, you know, surplus cash in the bank account. So You know, unfortunately, sometimes at the end of the day, they say cash is king, and you should be sitting with sufficient money in a company and saving for a rainy day. So, as I say, it's a 6-month process looking forward. We're in September. I think a lot of companies should be looking forward to where we're going to end up come December and January.
Such critical advice that you're giving here, Gareth, and I guess guidance for entrepreneurs to reconsider like the positioning of the business. And as you say, 6 months ahead, do you have the necessary contingency plans in place? But as you mentioned, typically for most entities, especially medium-sized businesses, they are run by their founders. So the executive directors, who are the guys on the graft every day, are also very close to the business. From its inception to the idea of keeping it going, and even the emotions that might be attached to it. So when it comes to having the foresight to implement much of this, you know, technical assessment, how much of a lack of knowledge plays a role here versus insufficient education, and making a call to get external participants in to derive the necessary assessment for you?
You know, you raise a very interesting point around it, and I think there's a number of points that come out of the issue which you've just raised. The first one is that people often, when they establish these companies, they treat it as an emotional attachment. Mm. And they say, I've built this company, it's been phenomenal, I've built it up over the last several years. And they sometimes don't face the reality that the market has shifted, that the company should have moved with the times and kept up with the pack at the time. And they sometimes aren't real to it, and they stick to sometimes the core business, and the core business is no longer there. They don't evolve, and so it's a problem that a lot of companies face. Secondly, there's also not sufficient succession planning sometimes at companies, where you find the founder started the business, they've either retired, moved along, handed it on to a successor who doesn't fully understand the business. So succession planning is an important one. The second one that's important is, have they kept up with market conditions and times? The third one comes back down to a lack of understanding around their liabilities and the legal duties. Now, bearing in mind, the Companies Act proposes and imposes an obligation on boards of directors to say that if you're financially distressed, you must pass a resolution advising creditors why you're not in business rescue, if you elect not to file for business rescue, and telling them why you should not be in rescue. Alternatively, you should be passing a resolution for business rescue. And that's on the basis that you're in financial distress. In other words, you cannot pay your debts as and when they fall due and payable, then ensuing 6 months and so forth. Uh-huh. Now, a lot of directors don't pass that resolution. They don't get proper advice. And as we've said before, every time that I've assessed companies and given advice to them, not every company is a candidate for a business rescue. Some companies file for business rescue, they're going into liquidation because they've left it way too late to do the turnaround. And I said to guys is that when you're in financial distress, it's not a matter about being proud and saying, well, I built the company, I know it better than anyone else. Sometimes you need the independent oversight and an independent view coming in and saying, let's do this, reshuffle that, let's downsize, let's upscale, let's diversify.
Yeah.
Get an independent set of eyes from an expert in the market and let them help you reshuffle and restructure these companies.
Gareth, you raised such an important point, and I can imagine for any director who struggles to remove the emotions from it, they probably look at it as well from a costing point of view, that hold on, I know this business, I've run it for so long, getting someone else to tell me what to do with the future of the business is just going to cost me money. But at the same time, there's also the unintended consequence of not spending that money and then actually struggling with the closure of the business completely towards the end of it all. Is that the catch-22 I presume you find a lot of businesses struggle with?
Well, let me ask you a question in reverse to your question for your listeners out there. When you're sick and you know you're terminally ill, do you go to the pharmacy and self-medicate knowing you need proper advice?
True.
And you know, it's the same question you need to ask of these companies. If I'm truly to save it, what is the price of, you know, proper expertise and expert advice? It's invaluable. But at the end of the day, even if cash flow is not there, you know, speak to the consultants, get the right people on board. And we've seen this in the past. You get the wrong advisor in, and the wrong business rescue practitioner in, it may lead to disaster. You get the right practitioner hands and the right practitioner and the turnaround teams coming in advance over there, it need not be a very expensive exercise. The biggest problem, why business rescue has got a bit of a bad stigma to it, is because companies have left it way too late. And because you've left it so late in the process, by the time the practitioners come in, you're asking effectively for a miracle to happen, and it can't happen. And the guys try as best as they can. Now you're dealing with aggravated creditors. You know, creditors that are very hostile, saying the board has stolen money, you know, all sorts of allegations flying around, and they've got to try and neutralize. It's a very difficult task being a business rescue practitioner sometimes. But straight to the point, you know, you can do the self-diagnosis. Anyone can, but you may get it wrong. And remember, you may have lost credibility with parties whom you owe money to, or the lenders, the banks, etc. And how do you save face? You sometimes need that independent person standing there and saying, it's a great company, we're here to save jobs, and the spirit and the purpose beyond the Companies Act, it's a balancing exercise, and at the end of the day, it's not like our economy is growing very much, but we really need to save jobs, save the company, keep the employment up. So we owe a lot to ourselves. So I think companies need to take an honest and a very hard view, looking into a lens into the next 6 to 12 months, and decide which way do they want to go.
You raise such an important point there, using that example. You know, it's like having a headache and thinking, oh no, I'll be fine. Meanwhile, you've got a brain tumor and bigger problems that can be solved, but they need to be mended with appropriate timing. Similar to seeking a professional healthcare provider, you want someone with great accreditation, qualifications, and years of experience. How do we spot that within a business rescue practitioner, you know, and a consultant who can actually help you journey through resuscitating your business to a new level of success?
So, Gugu, so on that point and that over there, you know, we generally say stick to your well-known and your accredited practitioners in town. Mm-hmm. You know, stick to the well-known turnaround teams in town generally. You know, not everyone is a suitable candidate for every company. It's also for courses. You've got to look at their skill set, the personality. Look at their professional affiliation. Are they affiliated with the South African Restructuring and Insolvency Practitioner Association? You know, start looking at their network behind it. How well are they known in the industry? The industry is relatively small, so parties generally know one another. Do your background and your homework. Over there. That's something which the listeners want. They can give us a shout. I can point them in the right direction. This is what we do. And we certainly keep a lot of people out of, you know, the hot water that they end up in, certainly when they get there. But the aim is primarily to save jobs, save the companies, resuscitate them. And sometimes what you find in the business rescue world, if they enter business rescue, is that it's sometimes better to do a merger and an acquisition and merge two entities together during the time. And what we've seen over the last 2 years has been quite interesting, where a lot of competitors have arrived. They've looked at their competitor that's folded, gone into business rescue and financial distress, and they end up buying up the entity to increase their market share and keep themselves alive. So you're seeing interesting patterns in the marketplace depending upon and sector to sector specific. But when you look at the practitioner skill set, you need to question their integrity. How many successful rescues have they had? And by success, what is defined by success? That one needs to interrogate. And that's what I say. Don't just appoint a practitioner just because you met him and he seems like a nice guy. Go and look at the war stories that he's had on his back. Go look at his reputation. Go speak to your lender. Let's lend money and have a look and suss them out.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Gareth, I this is why I enjoy my conversations with you, because we always walk away having learned a lot more and gaining some clarity. And the mergers and acquisition strategy that you mentioned is certainly one that we're also seeing in terms of the news headlines being reported. What I am keen to also get your thoughts on, and perhaps this underscores earlier themes that you highlighted, removing the emotional detachment, getting external or a third party opinion as soon as possible, and also making sure that you vet the necessary skills, is how often we find that when a business is to be resuscitated, the directors who might have been involved might no longer serve the soul, the purpose of the institution, you know, versus the strategy of the business just needing a realignment. So in other words, how often is it strategy versus people and leadership?
Sometimes I agree with you, and sometimes it does come back down to the people having kept up with the leadership and the strategy to keep the business alive. And what we find in the international markets, when companies talk about a turnaround, typically they come in with a team and whole of middle management will be replaced, because a turnaround requires a very different mindset. And the minute the turnaround has been done, that middle management disappears again, and you bring in the right players, the right role players, and you bring in talented people to lift the company into its next afterlife, and you help lift it back up to where it should be. And that's sort of where you end up. So typically sometimes the directors are to blame. Sometimes they're just naive in terms of what they're supposed to be doing. You know, they built the company, and you find that some companies just can't break their glass ceiling, or they're not geared for it. So they grow to potential points, and then they find themselves in a cash flow revenue issue where they've never geared for that growth, and they've overgrown, and the debt starts tumbling one out. I mean, there's a multiple of number of factors that apply. But when you have a look at it over there, remember, directors are not immune from liability. So if they start trading recklessly, they will be held accountable. If that company falls into a liquidation, liquidators will come after them for creditors' money and say, well, you traded recklessly during the time, and proceed against them under 424 of the Companies Act. So, you know, a number of difficulties arise for directors. And, you know, the only defense which a director will have at the end of the day is to say, I took proper advice from a reputable crowd and firm. I looked at my company. The advice was, let's try not to do a rescue, let's try and do an informal workout first. And if that fails, then let's consider the alternative options and see what they are. And that's at the end of the day is going to be your defense, because you're going to say, I didn't just trade recklessly. I took professional advice. I was not acting for self-interest. I was not acting for self-gain. I wasn't trying to profiteer.
I see.
I wasn't trading to create further liabilities and debt. So the minute you start diving into that world of saying, this is my protection, guys. I didn't trade recklessly. I took proper advice well in advance. And this is what I did. It shields you from a lot of liabilities and hostility from creditors. And I tell you, at the end of the day, integrity is everything. You know, we've sat in meetings where directors have honestly stood up at the body of creditors and said to the creditors, guys, I messed up. I took my foot off the accelerator. I wasn't watching the business. I was living the high life.
Sure.
And somehow it just imploded. And I'm sorry about that, but I know I owe sureties. And if you sequestrate me, I'm not going to have anything. But I tell you what, I'll make it good. Just walk this road with me for the next 12 months and you'll get paid. And the directors and the creditors said, you know what? There was a man of integrity. We're prepared to listen to him and we'll walk the road, but we're going to fight him along the way.
I can imagine.
Company that I'm talking about was in 2014, 2015.
Sure.
Today, the company's three times the size of what it was. And he still says, I owe it to the creditors. And he says he agrees. If he didn't stand up, he wouldn't have had the business today. But again, he had to change some of his fellow directors that were in the business with him, because ultimately they ran into the ground. But it's a long story. But no two shoes are alike. That's the unfortunate part. And you know, not one remedy cures everything. So you need to find the right players and you need to put them in there and do a proper diagnosis. And as I've maintained in all my conversations, business rescue is not for everyone. Try to do an informal workout and a restructuring. Consider 155 compromise. There's a number of other options available. And only when your back is against the wall, and that's when companies file too late, look at the alternative options before the time.
Goodness, Gareth, yeah, the war stories you can share. I can imagine the, you know, how egos have had to step aside and be swallowed, and clear conversations have to be carried out in big boardrooms regarding the survival of businesses. Thank you, as always, for making this so practical and relatable for us. And again, you know, reminding us as entrepreneurs to really implement a good 6-month trajectory of our business and its survivability. You know, how are we getting to December? What about the first 3 months of the year? Can we survive that? Gareth, always a pleasure having you on the show, sir.
Thank you, Gugu, and good night to you and your listeners. Thank you.
Thank you. Gareth Creeman, partner in the Business Restructuring, Rescue and Insolvency team at Cox Yates. And I think this is such a practical conversation for us to have, right? So often when we think about businesses that have found themselves in trouble, and we've spoken about a few of them. Think a few months ago about AutoZone when they were struggling. The post office is also a practical example, right, that has been struggling. But even yourself as an entrepreneur, regardless of the size of entity that you run, it's all good and well to know that you put your heart and soul and blood, sweat and tears into an entity. Maybe it was inherited and has been a family-owned business for years. Or maybe you are the one that's actually starting off a new trajectory, building a legacy for your family. At some point, the emotions need to step aside from the economic fundamentals of your business. And you need to be able to take a clear reflection to say, hold on. Can I make it to December and pay off all my creditors, pay off my staff, and even have the necessary cash flow to jumpstart activities for the beginning of the year? It's a tough one because it means that you need to constantly ensure that you've got the necessary partnerships, contracts, and of course systems in place to generate the revenue that you're looking for. If anything, a business can be saved. As Gareth mentioned, don't leave it for too long. Sometimes it's changing the dynamic. Sometimes it's recognizing that actually you can't be saved, but if you get bought or partner with someone else, then you could actually have a greater level of sustainability. But don't leave it for too long for you to seek help in building your business and essentially asserting its survivability. Survival, that's the word. Survivability. Look at me creating new English words. It's 5 minutes after 7 o'clock. You're listening to Kaya Biz. Let's take a quick ad break, right? Maybe that's what we need for survival as a keyword. It's 6 minutes after 7 o'clock. You're listening to Kaya Biz with myself, Gugule Tumfupi. Stay with us. When we come back, I'm excited for our next conversation. We're going to speak to the Southern African Association of Freight Forwarders. Key conversation that just helps us better understand. Next time you know that you've bought some form of big equipment, let's say a TV screen, even a car, bear in mind that that product comes from a distribution center that was on a truck and the contents was in a container that actually comes from one of our ports in South Africa. And from those ports, it comes from a cargo ship that has sailed miles and kilometers far and wide from various parts of the world to make it in here. So We're going to take a look. Next time you take a look at your particular item in your home, just know that for many of the products that might be imported into the country, there's a significant supply chain and value chain that has supported the delivery of that particular product. It's 7 minutes past 7 o'clock.
That's the sound of your business growing. Whether you're starting out or scaling up, turn your passion into profit with Capitec Business Banking. Save up to 50% on fees. Get fast credit approvals, personalized support, and Forex for your business. Open your business banking account on our app. Bank on better with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP 46669.